Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 11, the Paolo Di Scegli episode. So we remember the great number 11s of Juventus past. I think the guy who wore it before him was actually a little bit better. So salute to Patrick Swayze, the best number 11 that we've seen of
That was a weird moment when all of a sudden fullbacks started getting number 11 all over Serie A. He wasn't the only one.
Conventional Italy. You got to love it. As usual, that voice you heard was Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
How's it going, Danny?
We've got Chucks, fresh off vacation in Colorado. Hello, Chucks.
Yeah, good evening. It was quite the vacation for those of you who care, I guess. I was all the way up in Pikes Peak, the full 13,000 feet above sea level, which is roughly, I think, 5 kilometers or so. So I was quite literally in the clouds, unlike our dearly beloved Juventus,
More importantly, off the grid and not watching Juventus.
Yes.
And our man down in Mexico, Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, it's all good, man. It's all good.
We talked last week after a very disappointing result against AC Milan, and I think it's safe to say that this week's two results have pretty much, in terms of the performance, obviously Juventus actually got a point or two in these past two games, but the performances as a whole were not all that great. So I'll throw it to you first, Sam. We jokingly said a few weeks ago that Juventus kind of sucks. Is it a line from the Waterboy where, oh no, we suck again?
It certainly wasn't great. I won't steal Chuck's line. I'll let him use that. But it's so weird to get a read on things right now because this team that looked so... not even the technical aspects of it, just the mental aspects of a team that, you know, in those two games against Genoa and Torino looked so mentally hungry and all of a sudden seemed to have gone catatonic. And it makes me wonder if we're talking about just tired bodies producing tired minds. because this is so difficult to gauge because this is so atypical what we're experiencing right now in, you know, having played a game every 3 days for a month already and still going. You know, guys like Rodrigo Bentancur look, Bentancur in particular looks gassed.
My son is tired. He's tired.
Like, he's played he's played the full 90 in every game bar one since the Coppa Italia started.
Yeah, he's played as many minutes he's played the most minutes of anybody outside of maybe Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but I mentioned it on the match preview before the Sassuolo game. He's played about as heavy amount of a workload as he can get. And it's at a position where he's being asked to do so much more than probably anybody has been lately in terms of just trying to get everything going in the midfield and different spots in the midfield too. So as you were, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just think that it's just such a, you know, things are going so weird. Like, you know, Rabiot still kind of trending up. Danilo, weirdly trending up in terms of individual performance these last couple of days. Even Miralem Pjanic has all of a sudden started spraying some deep, good passes around. And it's just a matter, it's so hard to gauge. And, you know, it's, you know, you see the default, you know, a lot of people are defaulting into, you know, well, it's Sarri, he's, you know, but I think really what this comes down to is that the roster construction that Sarri was saddled with this year has really started to come back to bite him. And it also says a lot about how the whole structure of the restart really does favor younger and proactive sides like Atalanta and Sassuolo, who, by the way, were the two teams in the best form coming into their respective games in the league. And also two teams that are well settled into progressive tactical setups with very good coaches. Gasperini, very good coach. He's been there for 4 years now. Atalanta know what they want, and they have depth within the system. Atalanta's depth maybe isn't as good player for player as Juve's is, but within the system, they can swap out like for like, a lot like Sarri does. But the drop-off isn't anything because they just know what they're doing. Right now, Juventus really doesn't have that right now because they're still trying to get into Sarri's system a lot, and some of whom don't really fit it. Same with Roberto Di Zerbi, who, you know, if you want to talk about somebody to, you know, if Sarri does get fired, I would take Roberto Di Zerbi in a heartbeat. He's really had a couple of good years at Sassuolo. He's taken some really exciting young players and turned them into a really good attacking side. So what is it? Is it physical? Is it a physical collapse? Is it a mental collapse? Is it a coaching collapse? Is it just that teams are starting to catch up? Which, you know, we were so far ahead of the league for such a long time that the idea of some teams getting to our level is a little foreign. And I think that's something that we're going to have to start thinking about more as seasons go by, regardless of how we start playing, is that the rest of the league is starting to play better. And that is going to be a major thing for us in the coming years, as so long as they can keep things together.
I think I do agree with Sam on one thing. Everything is so broken in general that is so hard to just pinpoint one thing and say this is the culprit, right? Like, we're talking about a squad that was probably just fundamentally flawed from the get-go, a squad that is, I think, either the oldest or one of the oldest squads in the league. The average age is 29 years old, almost 30, and you have them playing every 3 days, every 4 days. What we thought was like our biggest strength coming back from, you know, the lockdown, it was our depth. It was that we could rotate guys in and out and, you know, always have fresh legs. And that is gone. We don't really have that anymore. We have Matthijs de Ligt out there playing, you know, on pretty much, I mean, with a busted shoulder at this time. Every time he goes down, he's clutching his shoulder. He very clearly needs like maybe some surgery, maybe rehab, who knows, but like we can't afford to sit him because our supposed, you know, vaunted center back depth is gone as well. Bonucci has a knock. Giorgio Chiellini, who started again against Sassuolo, which, you know, was nice to see, but he's clearly, you know, he's clearly still rehabbing. He's clearly still not 100% yet. So you have a one-legged Giorgio Chiellini out there, and you have Daniele Rugani, who, for all we give him, you know, some deserved slack, I think, you know, he's just not a reliable guy. You can't really trust him to come in and fill that spot. And you have the same case in so many positions. Like Aaron Ramsey, what is he doing out there? He's not providing depth. He's not providing anything. He's often injured as well. I mean, you have a squad that in theory, in paper, is so deep and has so many options. And then in reality, you see, it's like, we don't really have that many guys to put in. So obviously it's a little bit of physical burnout. I think it's definitely a factor. And I mean, at its core, it's a fundamentally flawed team for a coach that has a very specific style, and he can't play it with this team. That was a problem in August, still a problem right now. It's tough. I mean, they have a good lead, you know, 6 points, almost, you know, like Sam was saying before we recorded, essentially 7 against Inter, who is now second place somehow. You know, I would say that they're still the favorites to win the league, which is still a good place to be in. But there are so many things just flat out wrong with this team that it's so hard to just pinpoint one factor.
Yeah, and to follow off what you just said, Sergio, with the coach and the team and the coach versus system kind of thing, once again, I'm left with the question of, was Sarri brought in, was the coach brought in to fit the players at hand? So, you know, we had the players we wanted, and then was the coach that fit these players then brought in for that? Or was a coach with a certain system brought in, and then we were hoping to force that system onto the existing players? And, you know, I'm still left with that question, and I'm not really sure of the answer. 33 games in, still not really sure of the answer to that question, really, of system versus individuals. You know, if we go for a certain system, or if we just went with, or if we just had certain players and then just thought, this coach can, that'll do. I mean, as Danny mentioned, I was on vacation for the last week and a bit, so I did miss both games. However,
lucky
I did
you.
I know. Once again, I was up in the clouds, as unlike our team, which was firmly on the ground. But I did kind of catch the general sentiment of the two games that happened. And I mean, one thing that did just, I guess, shock me was, I'm not sure if it was the Atalanta game or the Sassuolo game or both even, that like at some point in the game, I think early on in the game, we had something like 30-something percent ball possession. Which is, you know,
yeah, that was Sassuolo. It was, for much of the first half, it was down in the 30%.
It was Sassuolo, yeah. I thought so.
Atalanta too. Both games, really, especially the Atalanta game.
I figured, I remember reading that. I just thought, my God, you know, that is, I mean, those are pretty concerning numbers. That said, I do have to say that, you know, I'm not really a ball possession fanatic or anything. I don't necessarily care about ball possession, you know, 30, 40, 50, 80% ball possession, whatever. But I mean, those are really, really low numbers, and very concerning numbers indeed. And the thing also, the reason about ball possession that I mentioned that is, you know, once again, brings me back to that argument of match control, which I think I'd mentioned in like episode 2 or 3 or 4, something like that. Yeah, match control, which is just, you know, you can have 30% ball possession. I don't really care. But, you know, you have teams where they have like 30% ball possession, but every time they have the ball, it's pass, 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 and then there's a shot on target, or it's a dangerous opportunity. It's a difficult save for the goalkeeper, which means that the team that has like, you know, 70% ball possession thinks, okay, well, great, we have the ball 70% of the time, but if we let it go, that 30%, you know, it could really, really hurt us. And that's, to me, that's match control. That's the team with less possession is still kind of controlling the match even without the ball, because there's that threat, there's that, you know, back of the mind, like, ooh, well, we got to watch out for that one. But with Juve, I didn't see that. I don't think we do that. I don't think we have that kind of latent threat to other teams. And that concerns me, you know. I mean, if you have that, then I don't care how little ball possession you have. But if you don't have that, which I don't think we have, then having 30% ball possession at a point in the game is extremely concerning. So, again, the lack of match control really from Juve over these, I mean, two games, over much of this season, is something that above all really does worry me for this season and going into the next season, really.
I think it's so interesting what you mentioned, because in the earlier games, in some games, we were mentioning, oh, they have all the possession and they don't seem to do anything with it, right? Like they lack that aggressive edge. And then in this one, we're like, oh, they didn't get any sort of possession. They got overrun. And that's, I think, the key for this Juventus season, is that we don't know which Juventus is going to show up on a week, on a game-to-game basis. There's no rhyme or reason why they seem to play really well one day and then play really badly the other. Of course, you know, the competition always plays a factor in it. But, I mean, you don't really know what you're going to get from this team. And I think Calvin or Tireless quote person at Black and White and Red All Over, you know, he posted Maurizio Sarri's comments after the game saying that he was angry that the team was maddeningly inconsistent. And it's like, well, my guy, that's kind of your job. I mean, why are they maddeningly consistent? Like, we don't seem to play any sort of system, any sort, like, you don't know what you're going to get from this team at all. And the fact that we're still having this conversation in July, while we're like, and we have five games left in Serie A, and we're still thinking, well, you know, the system, it shows flashes. It's like, we shouldn't be having flashes at this point. I understand that the squad wasn't custom built for Sarri's system. Like, I get that. But at the same time, you were not given a Sunday league squad. I mean, if you can't make something resembling your system work with these players, at some point, we do have to look at the coach. And I know he's the easy scapegoat, but I think you do have to look at him and say, how are we going to have to completely retool the team for us to finally get some semblance of Sarri ball, or what's going on? Because it is maddening that we're almost done with the season and the same questions we had in August of 2019, we still have them today.
I mean, I think that we were in for a retooling on this team regardless of whether or not Sarri ball heads solidified or not by this point in the season, just because of the state of the roster and how badly it's been put together, especially these last two seasons. If there's anything to hang a hat on with Sarri, it's, I've been talking with some friends of mine who are Napoli fans who say that the whole thing really didn't come for them until his second year. You know, they got guys, they absorbed things more. And also this year, it's impossible to judge anything based on the atypicalness of this year anyway, I think. You know, it's a little bit like what the Phillies beat writer on MLB.com that I was reading earlier today were talking about, you know, how do you judge the season? The Phillies, the Phillies were a little bit like Juventus going into this baseball season in that they had gotten a new manager. They had made a couple of moves to really beef things up with the roster. This was their go for broke year. And much like, you know, Ronaldo, you know, with the Ronaldo pickup being kind of the go for broke period with Juventus, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, baseball is about to start next week here in the U.S. and they're only playing a 60 game season. Can you judge the way that plays, or do you have to just throw it all away and try again next year? That's going to be a question that the front office is going to have to figure out, especially if they're going to stay with Sarri, which I really kind of think is going to happen. He's going to at least start next year. But yeah, it's just so difficult to make a real judgment because we don't know what we're looking at anymore after the stoppage.
Honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of obviously just the sheer erraticness of COVID, but then also a little bit of our team is just not optimal. And I lean more towards the latter because of the fact that this trend of just erratic performances by Juventus was already kind of existent before COVID. That's why I lean towards the, you know, something is
existent before kind of, Sarri.
Well, yeah. I mean, that, frankly, yeah. I mean, it was, and obviously that makes you appreciate Allegri more because, I mean,
By the end of his last season, we were doing the same thing that we're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, true. But, you know, over his, how many years he was here? Was it four or five seasons he was there? It was at least,
Five seasons.
it was at least not, I don't know, I felt like with Allegri, it was like, you know, we would generally just win, but it would just be like boring and just like kind of half-assed and, or I don't know if I can say that word, but it was, you know, kind of drab and all that, but it was still kind of a 1-0 here and 1-0 there. But Sarri, I mean, it's all over the place. It's frankly, it's like 30 minutes of amazing football and then just suddenly, you know, 3 goals conceded, 4 goals conceded or something like that. With obviously the defense kind of crumbling over the last few games as well. So I don't know. I'm inclined to say it was, you know, structural issues before COVID and yeah, rather than entirely COVID's the fault, I guess.
Yeah, and I think in general, I think we just rounded up the topic and we hit it on the head, and I don't know if we realized that, but this squad had problems before Maurizio Sarri. That is completely true. And this squad was just not a team that was built for a guy like Maurizio Sarri to come in. He was, from the get-go, I don't want to say the wrong choice to lead the team, but he was definitely not the type of guy that you bring in when you have the oldest squad in the league and when you have a team that is built with to win now, when you need to win right now. Like Sam mentioned, I'm sure that in Napoli it took time and it was probably the second, third year when they were really like in gear. But for Juventus, when you're expected to produce from the get-go, where you have a squad with Cristiano Ronaldo, who is a great player, but he is a veteran. He has a couple years left tops. You have a backline that is old outside of De Ligt. You have a team that is, everyone is a veteran. Everyone is like at their peak or, you know, reaching a post-peak moment. I don't know if you need to bring a guy who has the system and who needs those type of players to work a team. I mean, I think that was, I don't want to really negate the whole Allegri out saga we had the entire last year, but it just was, Maurizio Sarri is not a flexible coach and you needed kind of like a flexible coach, kind of a guy to come in and get the best out of the squad as it was currently built.
I mean, the way the squad is currently built, I also think it really puts paid to the idea of Ronaldo being the final piece. The team wasn't built for that little fallacy either.
Where's Hunter when you need him?
That is true.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18
plus. You know, seeing as we're on the topic of Sarri, and since we live where we are, we're able to see tomorrow's headlines today. Tutto Sport, our good old buddies over in Turin, they're basically running a headline that says Scudetto or out. So basically, without trying to butcher the Italian language all that much, the translation is essentially saying that if Juventus win the Scudetto, Sarri will be confirmed for another season. And obviously you can probably figure out logically if he doesn't win the Scudetto, which after facing Lazio on Monday, who the hell knows where things will stand. But, you know, is the heat rightfully under Sarri's seat? Should it be there? I mean, is it a case for, you know, basically that this club is working with obviously a flawed squad, but a squad where there doesn't have this massive window that, say, a younger squad like, I don't know, Atalanta maybe or other top clubs in Europe are working towards? I mean, where do you guys kind of stand with the fact that, you know, Juventus are working with a coach that clearly has a long-term or has a system that needs to work long-term for him to be successful, but also they're working within a window where time isn't necessarily their best friend.
I think once again, it comes back. I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I think one it comes back to, you know, when Sarri was hired, what was the intention/idea? Was it, you know, we want to play Sarri's type of football, so we're going to bring him in, and then we're just going to kind of figure it out with the players we have and just kind of, you know, shoehorn it all kind of together there to fit Sarri's system? Or was it, okay, we have the current players at hand, we're just going to kind of take that as a given right now that we have this set of players, and then let's get a coach that can optimize the performance of this set of players right here and play the system that optimizes for them. You know, I still just don't really know. Or I guess there's option C, and, you know, option C could just be, well, there was no one better at the time, which, I mean, that could be true as well. But so, I don't know. I want to say it was kind of upper management that honestly tried to get a coach with a certain system, and then they just, you know, said, you'll figure it out with the players that he has, but we want to play that system. I'm inclined to think that more than the other option, which, you know, makes me think, well, it's not really Sarri's fault. I mean, he was then kind of put into, you know, a wrong, you know, it's a whole square peg for a round hole kind of thing. I mean, I think that was really more the case. So, I mean, you want to blame the square? Do you want to blame the hole? Or you want to blame the person that was controlling the two?
In the grand scheme of sports, it's always the coach that takes the first fall. So the idea that Sarri's seat is hot is just the way of sports. But the people who really ought to be on the hot seat are upper management. I think that, you know, you look at this team with a midfield that's been neglected for years, with a youth system that has not produced any players of note since Claudio Marchisio graduated up to the first team. Moise Kean, yeah, but then you turned him into cash. I said something about this an episode or two ago about my frustrations with this, that the youth system is not actually graduating players that will help the first team. And we're the only team in the league with a B team. And yet we still don't see much in the way of progression there. You know, you look at, you know, Fabio Paratici, who failed to cut the dead weight last year, you know, bought a little bit, but bought better this year. You know, Demiral, goodbye. De Ligt, obviously goodbye.
Danilo?
Nah, at least we got, I mean, based off, honestly, if you want to ask me right now, based off of Danilo's like last two games, whether you'd want him in this form or Joao Cancelo playing right back for this team, I'd probably say Danilo right now, because Joao Cancelo just is so abjectly awful at defending.
Yes.
But also the fact that Danilo is one of only three fullbacks on the roster. Whose idea was this? It's, you know, it's upper management's failings are the reason why this team looks as bad as it does right now. And Fabio needs to have a heck of a transfer window, because I know Hunter's piece this past week ruffled some feathers when he talked about just how badly Beppe Marotta is outperforming his protege this year in the transfer window. But it's very, you know, Fabio's going to need to do some work in order to make that not the case, I think. Especially if Inter lands a guy like Sandro Tonali, who is the kind of player that Juventus really, really need. Sarri being on the hot seat, like I said, that is the way of sports and the way players do it. You know, the players, the way coaches live, they live with that responsibility that they're the first guys off the block. But he's not the person that's responsible for this. It's upper management that really needs to do a rethink on how this team gets built.
Yeah, and to add to that, Sam, I just remembered something as well. I read this book recently, or well, quite a while ago now, by really a great person, great human being. It's a book by this former Navy SEAL. His name is Jocko Willink, and actually wrote it with another former Navy SEAL, Leif Babin. So Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, they wrote two books, and basically they're about leadership. But the whole concept that the books are based on is this whole concept of, you know, there are no bad teams, there are only bad leaders. So, you know, he gives these examples of like just military focused examples of like, for example, if someone in the squad like forgot to check his equipment or something, or like his gun or something jams during an operation, you know, people will say, oh, it was his fault for messing up his equipment. Well, Jocko will be like, well, no, it was the leader's fault. He should have verified with the team before, you know, going into battle that everyone had done their, you know, checkups and stuff, and their gear check and all that, you know, protocol. So, you know, likewise there, I'm inclined to think that with Juventus, it's like, you know, no bad teams, only bad leaders. So, but then in this case, you could say, okay, is the leader Sarri here, or is it upper management of the club in general, you know, Agnelli and, you know, the whole president, vice president, and then just the whole staff that makes the biggest decisions. I'm going to leave that to the listeners to decide, you know, what say you? But, and obviously if you guys are interested in reading the books, they're called, I think it's The Dichotomy of Leadership and Extreme Ownership, if you're interested in reading those books. But yeah, it's just, you know, a leadership failure in general. But I guess the debate is, you know, whose leadership, Sarri's leadership or upper management? And I'm probably going to, you know, lean and agree with Sam here and say that it's, you know, upper management here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. This was probably a systematic failure from top to bottom and the result of this season. And regardless, however this season ends, as we speak, Juventus is probably favored to win Serie A again. But, I mean, I think we would really have to talk ourselves into this team making any sort of challenge for the Champions League this year, even with the weird Lisbon, you know, one game knockout type of weird Champions League we're getting this year. Like, even in that format, I mean, you'd really have to talk yourself into this team for them to really compete. So, you know, regardless of how the result ends for this season, this team was expected to do a lot more. And I think we all agree this is a systematic failure from the top to the bottom. But what I would like to see for the next season, you know, just scrapping this whole season away, is I would just like them to stop it with the half measures. If you're going to go full on with Sarri, if you're just going to say, listen, this is our guy, we brought him in, we believe in him, then commit. Then actually do what needs to be done for that system and for that coach to succeed. You know, even if it means tough calls, even if it means, you know, selling Cristiano Ronaldo, or even if it means just, you know, finally letting good old buddy Sami Khedira go, or just like actually doing what you need to do to build a squad that is actually going to work for Sarri. Because if they don't, if they, you know, pardon my French, but if they half-ass it again and they just go at like, oh, we brought in Arthur and we brought back Pellegrini from loan, and they just bring in a couple guys but they keep the same team, we're gonna be here sitting in July of 2022 and we're going to be asking the same questions, and we're going to be thinking, oh, is it the coach's fault? Is it the team's fault? I would just like them to say, listen, we're going to go full in with Sarri. We're going to tear the whole thing out. And if we lose the Serie A because we're building something from scratch, then so be it. But actually commit to something. And if that's not going to happen, then I think you have to admit that, you know, Sarri was probably not the right call, and bring in a guy that, whatever his system might be, you know, can actually do it with the squad as it's currently constructed. But I don't think it's going to be good for nobody if they just keep on the same path that they're currently on.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The defense these last couple games has been un-Juventus-like. And I remember writing in the end of January that Juventus were basically allowing one goal per game. I think it was 21 goals or 22 goals in 21 games. And one of our commenters after the Sassuolo game was like, well, the last few games have kind of skewed what the goal total was. And I was like, well, you know, before that it was, you know, not so long ago, it was basically one goal per game. So, you know, how concerned are you guys against the defense? And from our friends over at Viola Nation, who should start in Juve's defense for the rest of the year? And why should it be Daniele Rugani and three clones of Daniele Rugani?
I mean, at this rate, Daniele Rugani might be the only, like Sergio said before, might be the only guy on the center back on the team that's fully healthy at this point. I mean, you know, De Ligt's been dealing with this shoulder injury since before Christmas. You know, a lot of people, I wrote this in my match review yesterday, but a lot of the British tabloid talk about how De Ligt was out of favor and, you know, Demiral was usurping his place and this, that, and the other thing. That was because he had this shoulder problem that, you know, that keeps on popping up. I mean, he was going down clutching his shoulder without even really making contact with people yesterday against Sassuolo. And that's really, really worrying. Bonucci is, you know, if he has this foot problem, Chiellini, we'll see how, you know, he fortunately avoided anything long-term when he came out yesterday. Hey, Demiral, maybe Demiral will get up to speed by the end of the season. I don't know, because he's back in training now. If you want me to, if you want it right now, I think the best back four is probably Cuadrado, De Ligt, Bonucci, Sandro, based off of just fit, form, and health, and whether or not you can, you know, a guy can play 90 minutes. But that line is so decimated by the injuries that it's really hard to say who's better than the other right now.
I mean, I think it's so hard to say who's going to actually end up, you know, finishing the season. I mean, if I had to say something like Sam says, I think I would actually agree on all four positions. I think those are the guys that have been more reliable, more consistent, you know, not as injured as the other guys. But honestly, who knows? Like we mentioned before, and we've said a bunch of times now, De Ligt, his shoulder, who knows what's going on there? I mean, that definitely is going to need probably off-season surgery or something, because he's all constantly clutching it. Like, he's clearly in pain all the time. And we also come up, like, accept the fact that both Bonucci and Chiellini are old now. I mean, they were never going to play forever. Not everyone can be Gianluigi Buffon, but I think we also have to, you know, kind of come to grips with the fact that those guys are not really going to be in the picture for much longer. So if they give us, I don't know, a couple more seasons, that's probably it. So, but for this season, I think I agree with Sam, probably Cuadrado, De Ligt, Bonucci, and Sandro, if they are all healthy, which is something that it's pretty much a game by game situation. The one thing I do know is that the least we see from Daniele Rugani, the happier I will be. It's actually a direct correlation. The more Daniele Rugani plays, the happier I am, general, just like overall in my day. So hopefully we get some healthy center backs soon, so I just don't have to be angry all the time.
I think you and Rugani are like Hunter and Ronaldo, honestly.
The thing is, I'm not so angry with Rugani. I'm just disappointed.
which is probably worse.
Hey, I was called a Danilo hater yesterday, and that, you know, saying bad stuff about him didn't fit my agenda. So, I mean, who knows?
The condition of the center backs this year, especially if De Ligt has to have surgery, and goodness knows how long he'd be out. I've heard some people say that if he has the surgery he needs, he might be out for 5 or 6 months. Puts a lot on the fate of Christian Romero and will he be made a make weight this transfer season, or will he be brought back in because we need him?
Honestly, I think both, like you mentioned, I think just like overall health of the back line and just the general play of Daniel Rugani, it's probably the best thing that's happened to Christian Romero, who people were just, you know, starting to bring up as, you know, an easy kind of like a trade chip, was quickly sell him and get some funds. I think we're now looking realistically at him actually coming on and actually getting minutes, because Rugani has shown that he's, you know, pretty inconsistent. You really can't depend on him too much. And with the overall health of all the other defenders in the squad, I think he actually has a really good shot of actually being a Juventus player and actually playing some minutes next season.
Pellegrini too, and if he gets sold, I'm going to go hit people.
Inside, go crazy.
Inside Romero family knowledge. So we'll come back to you next week to see if we've heard anything else there, Sergio.
He's very excited.
From our loyal Twitter question asker, David Desberg at the True ROAC, it feels like Juve is now capable of executing Sarismo against low stake opposition like we did coming out of the break, but when we face high stake competition, we struggle. It almost looks like the team abandons the game script. Why do you think this is? And could it be trust in Sarri, maybe, or a different answer?
Well, I mean, I kind of disagree that, you know, coming out of the break, we were executing it well, because, I mean, I think, what was it, the game against Milan and then Napoli? I mean, they were pretty poor performances. And then the first game was against Bologna, if my memory serves me correctly, was, I mean, decent enough, but, you know, it wasn't really anything. I mean, it was just, it got the job done. Really think the only two or three games that we were like good, just really good, were, let me see, it was Genoa and Torino, and I'm doing this all at the top of my head.
And then it just all went to hell.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, yeah, those two games. And I want to say one more game that we had that we... No, it's probably Torino and Genoa. Yeah, off the top of my head. Those were, you know...
60 minutes against Milan. And then...
Yeah, of course. So, you know, once again, it's just like, have we really ever executed the true plan of Sarri, or, you know... of Sarismo. I really start to hate using that term. It's so cliche at this point. But anyway, Sarismo or Sariball or whatever the hell. I do it for the fans, so I'll just use that term anyway. But I don't know. It's I just have this, you know, pet peeve for like cliches and stuff. But
no, I know Chucks would like this, and I wouldn't be surprised if Chucks also has listened to it. But James Horncastle, the Athletic's Italian writer, and Michael Cox, Mr. Zonal Marking himself, on the Zonal Marking pod this week, they actually talked about the origins of Sarismo and basically how it originated from the internet and if it's really still applicable. So it's a pretty entertaining just to kind of hear them blame everything on Twitter and the internet and all that good
That's
stuff.
That's funny. Are you sure that was a football podcast?
It turned out to be one. I don't know if it started like one, but yeah.
I know, right? That's funny how they say that originated in the internet. I've actually not listened to that one yet. I have an endless list of podcasts and audiobooks.
You've been off the grid. You've got an excuse.
That too. You know, your cell phone signal is a little limited. 5 kilometers in the sky. So, you know, or above sea level, I should say. Well, in the sky, whatever. Same term. But yeah, no. I mean, really, quickly on the whole Sarismo, Sariball thing. It just makes me think of how like terms originate in general, like, or, you know, at all. And it kind of, you know, I have this odd theory, which again, this is not really related to the question, but I have to say it. And, you know, I really think that like all these quote new styles of football, I mean, I don't think there's really ever any new style of football at all. And I think just this applies to any kind of product or service or anything. I don't really think innovation is creating something new. I think innovation is just iterating on existing ideas. So it's, you know, I think an innovative style of football is one that combines, you know, Italian style football with more Spanish style, with German, with English, with, you know, I think that's innovation. But technically, you're not inventing something new because you're just taking stuff that already exists and putting it all together. So that's why I'm just, you know, I think of Sarismo and Saribo. I'm like, well, is it really like new? Is it really something created, or is it just something that was just meshed together from five different styles of football? So I don't know. But to answer his question anyway, I question whether we've ever, especially since the break or since the restart, really executed Sarri's style of football at all, or consistently over 90 minutes, let's say.
You know, assuming, you know, we accept Sarismo is an actual thing and not a social construct, as Chuck's, you know, proposes.
Yes, a social construct. Thank you. That's such a good term to use. Thank you. Make me sound so much...
The social Sarismo construct.
You make me sound so much more distinguished. Thank you.
Absolutely. Whenever, buddy. But, you know, if we do accept that it's an actual thing, I think we've seen it in flashes against any team, against every team, pretty much. I mean, I would say we even saw it against Sassuolo for a couple moments, and we saw it against Atalanta for a couple moments, and the only thing is, you know, against crappier teams, we see it more often and we see it in a more sustained manner. But I think it's been the same thing pretty much from the get-go. You know, flashes here, flashes there. I don't think, maybe a couple Inter games, maybe you could point to those games and say that was probably like a full display of, you know, an actual team that plays, you know, the style that Maurizio Sarri likes to play. But outside of that, I think it's been hit or miss in every single game. I would agree with Chuck that I don't think we've seen it just, you know, full on display really in the entire season.
We definitely haven't had it the way everyone thinks it is. I do think that the Torino and Genoa game were the closest that we've come, bar both Inter games, which were big game, which kind of puts a lie to the question, because those were big games against significant opposition, and they played the two best games of the year in those two games. And then I think you would probably put, I would slot the Torino game right underneath it. I mean, I guess it just comes down to, it's easier to implement the new when you have a bigger margin of error against teams that aren't as good, and against teams that, you know, like Atalanta, are, you know, so set in their ways that they know how they're going to attack you. And then I think it, although I do think it does kind of, I do think there's a little bit of a notion of panic coming out of it. You know, they do throw the script out a little bit if they start getting really hit on the chin, because they're still not certain where they're supposed to be going.
From at JF Moratoya, I hope I said that right. How deep should the rebuild be so Sarri could implement his style? Is the management willing to give him what is necessary? Basically, how short is Maurizio Sarri's leash?
I mean, in terms of how much were the management is willing to spend to give him what he needs, we won't figure that out until next season. When it comes to how deep the rebuild should go, I think the midfield needs to be turned on its head. The fullback core needs, maybe not to be turned on its head, but significant augmentation. And you have to decide what you're going to do with Gonzalo Higuain's spot on the roster. And if you want one more fullback forward beyond that to make a complete second line, if you will. A lot of that's going to have to do with what happens with Douglas Costa and Federico Bernardeschi, and how they might dovetail, and whether they want to play Kulusevski as a midfielder or as a winger. So still a lot of unanswered questions, but when it comes to the midfield and the fullbacks especially, it's got to be deep.
And before Sergio Romero, did you guys see the goal that Raul Jimenez scored this weekend?
he silenced him there, didn't he?
I beat him to it.
Oh, like a deer in headlights.
You better believe I did see it.
I know you saw it.
For a fantastic player, continues breaking records. Yeah, I guess to answer the question real quick, I think it has to be, like I mentioned, if they're going to stick with Terry, I hope it's a full rebuild. I mean, just pretty much top to bottom. I mean, you know, you really look at this team, and I think there are a lot of spots that you could conceivably improve. So, like Sam said, I think easily fullbacks, midfield, I think that has to be pretty much a teardown. I would, you know, if you want to get crazy with it, I would actually just say keep Bentancur and keep Rabiot and keep, well, Arthur, who's still not here, but, you know, sure, keep him. And then just everyone else is, you know, they can find new employment. And, you know, kind of like bring someone new for pretty much every single position. But, you know, if you want to be less extreme, I think just fullbacks, that's going to be huge. I mean, the fact that we have three full-time fullbacks in the squad, and it's atrocious squad building. So if you want to focus on one position, I would say fullbacks and midfield, probably the biggest concerns right now, if you wanted to do a full teardown.
To give a short answer to the question on my end, I think it's unlikely just because of the financial impact of COVID and, well, frankly, the uncertainty that comes with that. I think, yeah, it's unlikely to see more uncertainty added onto that through like a full roster overhaul. So, or it might say, you know, I mean, you could react one of two ways. You could say, well, there's so much uncertainty from COVID and especially financial impact, so we're not going to, you know, we're going to stick with what we know. Or you're going to say, well, since there's so much uncertainty, we might as well go fully turn everything upside down. And once the uncertainty from COVID kind of stabilizes and goes away, then we'll be ready. So who knows?
We'll wrap things up there. I want to thank you guys, as always, for your Twitter questions. I totally slacked on sending it out, so glad that we got the the response that we did in a short time window. But as always, you can listen to us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on Spotify and Google Podcasts. So for Sam, for Sergio, and for the fresh off vacation Mr. Chucks, this is Danny saying stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you next time.